Anya was as good as her word. When she could, she had them rappel down long casts, 100 feet at a time. They were coming at last down to less precipitous terrain. Levi proved as good as his word, too. When Anya leapt from perch to doubtful perch, he followed her unhesitatingly, flinging himself through space with abandon. They made rapid progress down. Reaching slopes that were anything other than sheer walls would make descent enormously less stressful, if not so quick as fast roping. It was the same for their opponents, too, of course. But Anya and the rabbi still seemed to maintain a substantial lead over the pursuers. Anya waited at the top of what looked like the last sheer face they had to negotiate before the slope grew gentler, belaying for Levi as he climbed down to her. The sudden terrifying noise startled the young scholar and made him lose his grip. He fell 15 feet to the sloping iced-over ledge like a sack of meal. The sound of his ankle breaking was like a handgun going off. Anya crouched over him. Another rock overhang 10 feet above shielded them both momentarily from gunfire from above. It was a tiny blessing.
Levi?
He smiled weakly.
You're gonna ask me if I'm all right.
Though a good 6 feet wide, which felt broad as an aircraft carrier's flight deck after some of the hair-thin purchases they'd used, the ledge slanted perilously outward. Anya yanked her ice axe from her belt and drove its pointy end through the ice to anchor her.
Of course you're not all right. Your ankle's broken. Here, let me...
Boots thumped on the ice behind her. Anya was already in motion, rising and turning in a single fluid motion. The ice axe made a soft squealing sound as she yanked it free of the ice. She didn't know exactly who it was behind her. It didn't matter anymore. There were no friends above them on this mountain of death, nor neutrals. Only enemies thirsting for innocent blood.
All right, Anya. I have you.
Anya saw Josh wasn't tied to a safety line, so eager had he been to score the kill. Anya spun clockwise and blasted a spinning back kick into his gut. Doubling over the kick, Josh flew backward into emptiness. Then he dropped. On the treacherous, slick slope, Anya's planted foot shot right out from under her. She planted on the ledge. With the remainder of her strength, she drove her axe's spike down through the ice to keep her from slipping away. Then, completely drained, she rested and breathed for a whole minute. Then she started to move.
Up. Up. You. Go.
She summoned whatever strength she had and forced herself up off the ice and onto her feet. Levi lay huddled against the cliff, holding his ankle with one hand.
Anya.
I'm fine. Fine. We need to move again. If we can get a little breathing room, I'll bind the ankle. But we can't afford the time right now.
You need to rest.
I'll rest later. Plenty of time. Alive or dead.
Anya used her last ice picket to secure them for a final rappel down the ice face. She went first, descending among lava rocks and big black boulders onto a steep but manageable slope. Then she held the end of the line as Levi came down. She didn't look at Josh Fairley, sprawled face up on a slab of black rock nearby. Levi had no trouble bouncing himself away from the mountain face with his one good leg. When he hit bottom, though, his leg buckled. Anya was there, catching him with an arm around him, keeping him from going all the way to the ground, strewn with sharp black pebbles. She eased him to a sitting position. Then and only then she turned and gazed down at the broken corpse. Josh's face was bone white. The hazel eyes stared sightlessly back the way he'd come to this sorry state. His head was about half the normal depth. Glistening red surrounded his dead face like a halo and ran down the side of the rock like wild long hair. Anya shook her head.
You don't go easy on yourself, do you? You don't want it to become too easy.
No. That's the fast track to becoming a monster worse than the ones I fight against. I don't lose sleep over the men I kill. They're always trying to kill either me or somebody I've chosen to protect. But I don't ever let myself take it lightly.
She knelt by the body and gingerly opened the thick yellow and blue jacket. Fortunately, it wasn't soaked. She reached inside.
He was somebody's beautiful baby boy once. His mother will probably cry her heart out when she finds out he died broken on this godforsaken mountain. What I did was right and necessary. He probably deserved it. As punishment, I mean, not just as an act of self-defense. But it's a terrible responsibility. And it has to be.
Levi was staring at her wide-eyed.
Oh, what on earth are you doing?
Looking for this.
She held up Josh's black pistol. It was a Sig Sauer P226, very popular among government types, Anya knew from too much experience, especially the U.S. Navy SEALs, one of whom Baron had been. She gripped the top rear of the slide with her left palm, pushed forward with her right enough to crack the chamber, and glimpsed the yellow gleam of a shell casing. Then she locked it up again, stuffed the pistol in her harness, and quickly searched the body for extra magazines. She came up with two. She would have liked to count cartridges in the magazine in the well, but there wasn't time.
Right.
She rose and turned back to her companion.
Let me help you up. Time to go.
The rabbi looked at her with pain in his eyes.
Anya, you've got to leave me.
No.
Anya knelt, slung one of his arms over her shoulder. His usual schoolboy gallantry forced him to get to his feet, foot, as best he could.
All right, come on now. We need to keep moving.
Anya started walking Levi down slope at an angle, both to make their three-legged descent easier and to head for the cover of a huge outcrop 50 feet away.
You're the rationalist, Anya. Be rational now. One of us has a chance to get away. You, alone. The two of us. One and a half. We have no chance. It's simple mathematics.
That's not how I do things. Now, keep that foot away from the rocks or you'll regret it.
What will we do then?
You hop along as you can. Then I'll carry you.
But...
Shut it and hop, please.
He stared at her a moment, then did as she said. He was helped by the fact that she continued to move at an angle downslope. He had to hop or get dragged. Anya set her jaw. Levi looked back once, then turned his face forward. The shot set Anya's nerves on edge. She kept moving. Levi hopped with redoubled vigor. They reached the outcrop, its black lava covered in razor-edged pockmarks. Anya dragged Levi hastily behind it.
Wait one.
Anya eased Levi down and propped his back against the boulder. She drew the gun and leaned out around the rock. She lined up the sights on the first face she saw, which she guessed from the dark goggles was Baron's, so that it seemed perched like an apple atop the white-dotted front sight. Then she squeezed. She missed both times. On the second shot, she actually saw black chips fly from the ledge 3 feet below where Baron's head had so abruptly vanished. She ducked back no less quickly. Missing didn't bother her much. One of the trickier feats in marksmanship is shooting at somebody at a significantly different level than you are. After all, the difficulty in hitting a target down a sheer slope, with the added challenge of keeping one's own perch, was probably all that kept them alive so far. Anya's main intent in opening fire was to show their pursuers that the prey could now reach out and touch them back, no matter how fanatical they were. And these boys did seem to be extreme in their devotion. They had to face the cold truth that if they all got picked off, they'd fail their angry deity, rob him of his chance to come back and scour the earth in fire to show his love. They wouldn't be martyrs, they'd be failures. So, like it or not, they had to move more cautiously.
It still sucks I didn't take out Baron, though. The guy is good.
Given Baron's battle savvy and his combat skills, she judged he made up half the effective strength of their opponents. Or more, given that it was down to him, Charlie, Eli Holden, and ex-Marine Zach Thompson. The ex-SEAL was equal to the rest, easy, even if you didn't count Charlie Bostich as a liability rather than an asset.
Let you keep their heads down.
She turned back to Levi and tucked the handgun away.
All right. Yeah. Up you come.
Maybe I can hop along okay if I hang on to the back of your harness.
Try that. If you can't keep up, I'll carry you.
Wouldn't? What am I saying? Of course you would.
In a New York minute.
He latched on, and they made their way down the rock-strewn slope.
You're insane, Anya Creed. But I think I know now what they mean by divine madness. Truly, you are touched by the Creator's hand.
Whatever. Right now, it's the angels of death up there I'm more worried about.
It wasn't easy climbing down Ararat, especially with Levi left with only one working leg. Apparently, Anya's new ability to shoot back was making the pursuers more cautious. She spotted them following a good 500 yards back. Clearly, they were waiting for better terrain to close in and finish their prey. She took advantage of their wariness to tend to Levi's left ankle. The day ground passed in a haze of black rock and panting breath, of cloud shadows alternating with bright sun. Anya's body and limbs turned to lead, somehow shot through with dull red pain. After a quick rest, she ignored the pain and pushed on.
Let's keep moving.
Anya hoisted Levi up and slung his arm around her neck.
Yeah, I've got a bad feeling.
Huh. A large male body flew at her from the rocks to her left. With no choice, Anya let go of Levi. The rabbi went down like a sack of grain.
Yeah.
But she managed to turn to face their attacker. The attacker lunged for her throat.
No!
She grabbed Zack's massive forearms and hung on as the pair went down. As she fell, Anya got the cleated sole of her right snow boot into her assailant's midriff, flipping him over his head as she landed hard on rock. The young wolf flew right over her to smack against a big rock. Anya sprang to her feet and pirouetted to face the man who jumped her. The ex-marine moved much too quickly for Anya to summon the sword. She launched a front kick for his groin or lower belly. He batted her leg away with his left hand and punched her in the face with his right. The belt drove her back against a rock wall. Her head snapped back and cracked into the rock. Lightning shot through her brain and her stomach lurched. She didn't lose consciousness, but for a moment she lost control of her limbs and mind. Her body sagged against the cold, merciless rock as her thoughts spun.
I'm gonna die. He's gonna beat me to death.
Her wits were too scattered to focus her will enough to summon the sword before he was all over her. But somehow, he wasn't. Anya forced herself to concentrate. She forced her vision to clear. She saw Zack Thompson looking away from her, down and back at Levi. The skinny rabbi was clinging to Thompson's leg with both arms. His teeth were clenched. His legs trailed back after him over the dark rock. Thompson backhanded Levi in the face. Levi's goggles came off. His glasses went askew on his nose. He screwed his eyes shut tight and still hung on. Sheer outrage did for Anya what all the power of her own will couldn't. She launched herself from the rock. The color red began to bloom on Zack Thompson's white and blue stocking cap. A line of red appeared, running from his left brow, right beneath the knit cap, across his nose to the edge of his right jaw. His eyes, still wide and staring into Anya's, dulled. His body slumped to the black rock beneath his boots. Anya lowered the sword to the rock and leaned on it, panting. She felt sick and utterly spent.
Thanks, Levi.
Least I could do.
Levi settled his glasses back on his nose. One bow had snapped off. Then he carefully put the goggles back onto his face. It was rapidly puffing up and going pink from the effects of Zack's backhand.
I hope that holds him in place.
He turned to look at her with a silly smile.
Zack!
Leif Baron was not close, but he wasn't high enough or far enough away for any kind of comfort.
Zack, you idiot! Where are you?
Can you keep going?
As well as I could before. I don't walk on my face. Oh, it sure feels as if I have.
Anya reached a hand to Levi. They gripped each other, forearm to forearm. She hauled him to his one good foot. He swayed against her, then, pushing off with an apologetic smile, straightened himself.
Let's get going. Only a few thousand feet left.
Piece of cake.
They were getting near enough to the bottom to get a good look at the terrain awaiting them below. A fairly substantial stream wound around the base of the mountain, sporadically visible as they picked their way from cover to cover. Beyond it stretched a mile or so of flats, tan with dry bunch grass and dotted with dark scrub. Shiny patches of white showed where snow remained. It seemed the recent fall concentrated on the peak. Anya frowned slightly, remembering Levi's half-joking assumptions that gods were battling each other over their destinies. West of the flats, the land rumpled up into sinuous black ridges separated by narrow gullies. Anya kept getting bad vibes from the landscape below. She couldn't see anything that looked more dangerous than a thorn bush, not consciously anyway, but she couldn't shake a nagging sensation she was missing something potentially major, possibly deadly. She said nothing about any of that to Levi. They had too many clear and present dangers to worry about possible phantom misgivings. As she looked down to pick their dubious way through the scree and obstructions, Anya felt a cool touch on her face. Her vision seemed to dim slightly. Raising her head to look out, she saw shadows swiftly coming over the panoramic landscape of Ari Province. She looked up. Between the two struggling human specks and the sun, the clouds were gathering. Though the light from above turned their edges to incandescent silver, their bellies were an ominous slate gray. They seemed to be moving with unnatural speed. Where they came together, they visibly churned.
Wow! It looks like a movie!
Do me a favor, Rabbi. No editorial comments on the meteorological phenomena. Please.
Anything you say, Anya.
But Levi's eyes twinkled behind his one-winged glasses. In breathtakingly short order, Anya and her companion found themselves hobbling through premature twilight. They descended by steep slopes covered with black gravel that had a dangerous tendency to slip out from underfoot. Their progress was a halting three-legged dance, with Levi right behind Anya, clutching onto the back of her harness for dear life. At least here, if they slipped on loose gravel and fell, there was much less risk of shooting off over a precipice to certain death. But an uncontrolled tumble down a rocky slope wasn't fun, nor safe either. They entered a fantastic-looking landscape of violent juts and frowning looms of rock, rough granite, smooth-textured basalt, and sharp-edged lava, pitted and matte black. Anya picked her way between the great outcrops, using her hands to support her on the surrounding rock when she could to counteract the chancy footing.
It's like being in some kind of old black-and-white movie.
It is, isn't it?
The rock looming around them was predominantly black to begin with, as was the gravel and soil underfoot. The granite did muster shades of dark gray. The crisp bunch grass that sprouted from the gravelly slope and niches among the outcrops was leached of color and moisture by premature winter. In better light, it might have been at least a wan tan. The land leveled. It was temporary. They were still several hundred feet at least above the base of the cinder cone. It was a relief all the same. Anya was becoming acutely aware of how loud the black gravel was crunching under their boots.
I wonder why they haven't attacked us for so long.
I was wondering the same thing. I think they probably decided there was no point either in wasting bullets or attacking us where there was a real lively chance they'd wind up splattered on some rock without us even having to do anything. We still have a long way to go. Maybe they even thought we'd figure we were about out of the woods and get careless.
What do you think they'll do now?
Anya shrugged. They mounted a low rise to get between rounded, house-sized protrusions. Anya winced as the dry branches and gray leaves of a bush rattled at their passage.
Baron's the professional tactical guy, which sucks from our standpoint. I'm not a professional. But if it were me running the circus, I'd split the group up.
Divide your forces? I thought that was a major no-no.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not a big military historian either, and there's a limit to how much my knowledge of, like, the Battle of Pavia in 1525 is going to be applicable to this happy 21st century of ours. But I've been in some fights. Battles, you might even call some of them. Small ones. Mostly.
Somehow, I rather figured that.
So anyway, if you're gonna try a pincers movement, a very basic tactic to catch your enemies on the flanks, what you have to do is split up.
As Anya spoke, she began to swivel her head more constantly left and right.
Yeah, hitting flanks are important for all kinds of reasons. One is if you get your enemies looking left, your pals coming from the right get free shots at their backs. See?
All too clearly, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, stay alert. Also, the better trained your troops are, the more leeway you have to do things like split them up. And I'm afraid Baron and Eli Holden are both really good at that sort of thing. I bet they run the students through all kinds of tactical field exercises at the academy. If they didn't before Baron signed on, they sure do... Down!
Anya actually felt the bullet pass her face.
Ow.
Levi's face was pale behind his grown-out beard, thin, mobile features twisted in pain. Anya looked around. Past the outcrop to their left, a black promontory rose a story or so higher. The shot had come from that direction, right enough. Probably the nearby black boulder. A muzzle flash caught her eye from just past the end of the boulder that screened them. She rolled to their left.
No!
Oh. Anya's move hadn't come quickly enough to save them if it had been going to hit them anyway. The missile came from about 50 yards away. It was still an uncomfortably good shot with a handgun, even if the shooter were prone and had the piece well braced. They were out of sight of the spot where she saw the muzzle flare bloom like a lethal yellow flower.
Get on my back, Levi.
What?
On my back! Quickly!
He hesitated a split second. Then she felt his weight sprawl on top of her. She pushed herself up to all fours.
I knew someday I'd be grateful for doing all those hated push-ups every day.
Against her protesting muscles and joints, she crawled right up to the side of the big basalt jut to their left. There she collapsed. Anya's arms and shoulders felt as if they were on fire.
You can get off now.
Oh, what? Oh, sorry. Ouch.
He rolled off too fast and jarred his damaged ankle again.
No need to apologize.
Anya looked around. 10 or 12 feet behind them, a smaller rock outcrop, maybe 3 feet high, stood near the boulder. There was at least a shoulder-width distance between them. Some bunch grass sprouting around it offered some additional concealment. Anything helped, she thought.
Levi, can you get yourself back in between those rocks there?
Yeah, I think so.
Hide as well as you can and keep your head down.
What's going on?
I think the shooter is trying to drive us, like a beater for wild game. Chasing us toward the hunters to get shot.
What are we gonna do?
You're gonna make yourself scarce, like I told you. I'm gonna try to even the odds.
It took a massive act of will to wrench out of the gravel's embrace, sharp and cold, and as comfortable as the finest bed she'd ever slept in. Her every joint creaked, and every muscle screamed protest. She ran, bent over, back the way they came. As quickly as she could, she moved back down the far side of the boulder that hid Levi from the shooter she was sure about. Ahead of her, two squat pillars of dark stone rose a couple of stories in the air. Slim as she was, there was just room to slip between them. She clambered up 6 or 8 feet to the crack. It was a tricky climb. Then, turning sideways, she forced herself between the columns. She emerged onto flat ground at just under the level of the cleft. 30 feet away, Eli Holden stood on top of a basalt outcrop about 4 yards high. He held his Sig Sauer muzzle up and shifted weight from the front of one booted foot to the other as he craned to try to spot the quarry he was trying to creep up on and surprise in their hiding place. His jacket hung open, and his close-cropped, red-haired head was bare. He and Anya locked eyes. For what seemed a very long time, they simply held that tableau, staring at each other.
It doesn't have to be this way, Eli.
His cheeks drew back, tightening his mouth into an almost sweet smile.
Yeah, it does. I wish it didn't, though.
He sounded entirely reasonable. It was odd. She had him sized up as a stone-dumb fanatic who let others do the talking as well as the thinking. Instead, he sounded wistful, and his voice was that of a man who was thinking and was pained by his thoughts. He moved first. For all Anya's lightning reflexes, he would have had her cold had she not expected it. But all he had to do was lower his P226, get a flash sight impression, shoot her. She had to draw from her belt. She threw her left hand straight up over her head, cupping the fingers as if gripping something. The sword appeared, glinting dully in the twilight. She saw Eli's head jerk back in surprise at the impossible appearance of such an utterly unlikely weapon out of thin air. Then her right hand was up, the front sight of her weapon at the level of the center of his mass. Her first shot missed. She saw, or thought she saw, the second pluck the inner right hem of his jacket. He flinched. His arm jerked upwards a fraction. His shot roared over her head. Releasing the sword, Anya dropped her left hand to cover her right. He staggered and fell. His body rolled back out of sight behind the rock jut he was standing on. His gun dropped into a tangle of sharp-toothed rocks and thorny brush where Anya knew with sick certainty she'd never have time to find it. Instead, she turned around and scrambled quickly up the slope again to pass above the two basalt columns she'd pressed against. Trying to move quickly from rock to rock, she ran back to the north. She went past where Levi lay, thankfully hidden from her sight. She was sure the danger now was advancing from that direction. Leif Baron either thought she was dead or thought Eli was. In either case, he'd be moving in, whether to finish off just the rabbi or both of them. She didn't know where Bostich was. The wise thing was to let Baron do a bullet's job. Freed from the necessity of propping up poor half-crippled Levi, Anya sprang across the rocks and gravel with relative ease. She no longer felt stiff or sore. The turbocharge the gunfight with Eli gave her didn't hurt either. She made no effort to stay quiet or unseen. She wanted Baron to home in on her and not the defenseless Levi. What she was trying to do was attract attention while making herself a terrible target. She succeeded. As she anticipated, Baron spotted her first. She was jumping from one level to another, 4 feet down. The shot passed through the space she occupied a heartbeat before. Loose chunks of rock slid out from under her feet. Anya let herself sit down hard and slide down another dozen feet to the bottom of a narrow, dry stream bed in a crunching slide. She scrambled up a pile of granite rocks on the far side and peeked over. This time, she saw Baron first. He was moving between boulders not 20 yards from her. Either he was lucky, or his peripheral vision caught the quick, purposeful motion as she thrust her captured handgun toward him. He vanished from sight, even as the weapon bellowed and bucked in her hand. She was down to her last half-magazine. She thought she had about 6 shots left. She never quite got the hang of counting shots fired in the stress of combat. Nobody she knew had, either. They played hide-and-seek with guns among outcrops 6 and 10 feet tall. Anya ran a few paces, then bent between 2 rocks and fired 2 quick shots toward where she guessed her enemy was. He popped up over a rock 7 feet to the left of that and fired 2 quick shots in return. She had ducked back already and was on the move to another spot.
Damn!
She heard Baron curse. She scrambled up an 8-foot chunk of granite and snapped a quick shot over the top toward the sound. He fired back. She had already turned and slid back down the rock.
Been fighting a desk a little too long, haven't you, Jocko? You may keep your hand-eye skills sharp shooting off your 100 rounds a day or whatever, but you've forgotten that you can't miss fast enough to catch up.
Being well-drilled in that philosophy herself, what Anya was doing, busting caps while scarcely aiming, ran totally against her grain. But she had a plan. If she hit him, bonus. But what she was mainly trying to do was get him to do what he'd just done. Waste cartridges. She kept moving fast among the field of big rocks and outcroppings. They kept closing the range between them, even if it was 3 steps closer and 2 steps back. Sensing she was getting near the former seal, Anya scrambled up a big, rounded granite boulder. She hoped to surprise him with a short-range shot from above. As she reached the top, Baron's head popped up like a bald prairie dog, facing her not 8 feet away. He had shed his jacket and wore only a black t-shirt despite the cold. Both off balance, they each snapped off a one-handed shot. Anya turned at once and slid down the rock. The slide of her gun was locked back over an empty magazine. But as her boots thumped onto the gritty ground at the base of the boulder, her mind burned with a single image. She saw Baron's identical black P226, identically slide-locked.
Can you hear me, Anya?
She started moving up the slope.
I know where you are. You know where I was.
I'm empty. All out of cartridges. You are too, I bet. I saw your slide locked back.
He was moving now, too. The weird acoustics in this devil's rock garden made it hard to tell where.
You're going to die, Anya. You and the rabbi. You know that, don't you? You know I don't need a gun to kill you both.
She she stopped with her left shoulder almost touching the side of a granite rock 10 feet high. It ended just a foot or two ahead of her.
You've got the devil in you, Anya Creed! You must be full of the devil himself to get the kind of power you showed! That's it, isn't it? You're full of the devil!
Anya ground her teeth and waited. Baron was getting close. She could feel him.
But I've got the cure for that, Anya! My knife! A good, sharp knife! It'll end your suffering, Anya. It'll cut the devil right out of your black heart. You'll love having the steel cleanse you, Anya. It'll feel better than the devil's will. And the best part of it is...
He was right in front of her. He held a steel combat knife low by his right hip, ready to plunge deep in her flesh and slice.
The pain will be over.
He looked down to see the gleaming broadsword pressed right up against his six-pack. Two strong female hands clutched the hilt, with bones and veins standing in bold relief.
Mine's bigger.
God!
Come on, Levi.
Anya heard the brush stir. Levi's head appeared between the rock clump and the boulder.
You killed both of them? Baron, too?
Eli and Baron, yes.
I knew you could do it.
That makes one of us. But to my surprise, I did. Come on, take my hand. We're not off the mountain yet.
No! What about Mr. Bostich?
He swayed and had to grab her shoulder to steady him. Anya got them headed down, away from the crest, and toward bidding a none too fond farewell at last to the Mountain of Pain.
I didn't see him. Let's just hope he decides that what all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't do, the king's better off not even trying, or something. Losing all his acolytes and his superhuman killing machine must have shaken his morale. A little bit, anyway.
Levi shook his head.
I don't know, Anya. You seem pretty desperate. Men who don't think they've got anything left to lose strike me as good martyrdom candidates.
Oh, well. All I can think of to do then is stay frosty. And if he catches up with us, we'll do our level best to make sure he gets to be a martyr.
I'm down with that. So who are they?
The two of them lay side by side on their bellies, screened by brush and rocks at the top of a 40-foot bluff. Below them lay the stream, the base of the mountain, and freedom. Across the stream from them, a couple of hundred bearded men in long coats sat and smoked on the flats. The waiting men all kept Kalashnikovs and rocket-propelled grenades near at hand. They appeared to be watching the cliff intently. If they were conversing, Anya was too far away to hear. They weren't being boisterous about it. In fact, they looked deadly serious, these bearded, smoking, well-armed men.
Kurdish militia, Peshmerga.
Is it just me? Or do they not look too friendly?
They don't look too friendly. Something tells me they're our late guide Hamid's pals, waiting here to make sure no infidels get down off their fiery mountain alive.
How do they know we'd be coming down around here?
Binoculars, ears, gunshots carry.
Oh, yeah.
Anya studied the situation. It didn't look good. There were some arroyos eroded deep into the reddish face of the bluff, steep but not sheer, that they could probably use to get down all right, if there weren't 100 guns shooting at them. 100 yards or so to the north, the stream widened into a green pond where a rockfall blocked its original course. After another 150 yards or so, the bluffs petered out and gave way to a slope strewn with furniture-sized rocks that ran all the way down to the stream. The same thing happened maybe 400 yards south, but with bigger and fewer rocks.
They'll be keeping an eye out to see if we try going down there where it gets less steep.
That's about how I've got it sized up. How are you feeling?
I hurt. I'm running on empty.
Me too. But we may need to hike a few more miles. Work our way around the base of the mountain until we get out of sight of the reception committee. We could try to slip past the inevitable patrols under cover of night. That kind of thing.
This isn't gonna end, is it, Anya?
Oh, it'll end.
It won't end well, I mean.
Probably not. You weren't planning to live forever, were you?
Well, I was sort of hoping.
Me too. Well, we can go on hoping for a while yet. Let's get rolling before our poor overworked muscles set up like freshly poured concrete.
Anya started to slither back away from the edge. Anya caught a glimpse of the men across the river, throwing away their smokes and jumping to their feet, snatching up their weapons. Then she twisted her body to stare back at the mountain. A rumpled figure stood on a granite knob 100 yards away, with Ararat's black cone rising behind him. It was Charlie Bostitch. He had his jacket hanging open, his gut hanging out, and lank hair hanging almost in his eyes. In his hands, he held an object maybe 2 feet long. With a sinking heart, Anya made it out through the gloom as a folding stock AKSU short assault rifle. Unlikely as it seemed, it almost had to be the weapon that went over the cliff with Hamid. Evidently, the young wolves found it. The legendary Kalashnikov toughness meant it was actually still in working order. That had to be more than you could say for its former owner.
I can't let you slip away from me, Anya! Not alive!
Get ready to run for it.
Run?
Hop.
Sure you can, Charlie. It's over. You lost. Give it up. Anyway, all the Peshmerga in this part of Turkey are waiting at the foot of this cliff to carve us like Christmas turkeys.
That doesn't matter to me. It makes no difference whether I live or die. My lord's waiting on me, Miss Creed. I just have to make sure you can't pour your poison into the world's ear.
He stared down the side of the rock. The incoming fire didn't come close to striking her. Anya winced anyway. That abbreviated barrel made the AKSU loud.
You're Jezebel! You're the whore of Babylon! I should have known you were wicked when you introduced lust into my heart, when you tempted me! You brought this on yourself! Now, you ought to pay the price!
Now would be good.
Clutching his hand, the pair set off at a trot through the brush. Anya ached to sprint, but Levi could never keep up with her, trying to run on one leg, and she wouldn't be setting any records trying to carry him either. Bostitch had started off down the south side of his boulder. She took them north. A whole 4th of July's worth of gunfire broke out from the Kurds on the ground. What they thought they were shooting at, Anya had no clue. The angles were wrong for any of them to see her and Levi or Bostitch. Bostitch paid no attention. Maybe he didn't notice the fireworks. He sprayed another burst after his fleeing prey. Somebody at the back of the pack must have tried a long lob shot with an RPG that could fly for over a kilometer. The rocket motor burned itself out while the projectile was still climbing toward those sinister clouds. Anya never saw it coming. The rocket-propelled grenade didn't hit close enough to hurt them with fragments or blast effect, but knocked Anya off balance. She went down hard to the sound of her ankle popping. She blinked her eyes reluctantly back into focus. Levi had his head uplifted.
It's a jet, Anya. It looks like a fighter.
Great. That's all we need. It probably hates us, too.
Levi slid his leg out from under her.
You should probably get up now. We got a lot more immediate problems.
Anya snapped upright. Bostitch was stalking them. Tears gleamed on his puffy cheeks, shining like gold in the near-horizontal radiance of the sun. He pushed the stubby Kalashnikov out in front of him. Seeing Anya respond, he raised the stock to his shoulder. From 50 feet away, the hole in the muzzle looked her right in the eye. She caught her breath and braced for a last desperate dive to the side. It wouldn't work, but she was damned if she was going to die frozen like a terrified rabbit. The weapon wasn't making any noise. No fire. No nasty little bullets moving at several times the speed of sound.
Empty!
Anya could barely make him out through the ringing in her ears. It sounded as if Quasimodo had set up shop in her skull.
It won't save you. The Lord provides. I got more.
Anya scrambled up. Pain stabbed through the joint of her hip. Her right ankle wobbled. She found herself tipped against Levi. She wasn't sure how he'd gotten to his feet unaided.
Down to two legs between us.
She looked over her shoulder. Her tiny hope of possible escape died. The ground fell away not 10 feet behind them, as if severed by God's paper cutter. Down on the flats, the Kurds fired enthusiastically. Through the grass at the brink, she saw a little arc of green below. They had nowhere to go. She took Levi's hand. Bostitch had dropped the empty magazine from his weapon. He fumbled to stuff a fresh one into the rifle's well. His hands didn't seem to be cooperating with his eyes too well.
I got you now! You can't escape!
Leaving his big, unsteady hands to sort out the reload as best they could, he lifted his face to show the victims waiting for his sacrifice a wide, gloating smile.
It's the end! The end for you sinners! I'll be washed in the blood of the Lamb!
Over the madman's right shoulder, Anya saw a speck appear against the sky. Setting sunlight glinted off a wing as it dipped forward and grew. The magazine finally went home with a click. Bowstitch racked the charging handle to chamber a fresh round. Something dropped from the sleek belly of the slender winged shape. It was a long, thin egg that twinkled in the slanting sunlight as it tumbled end over end.
You are weighed in the balance!
Bowstitch raised his short rifle. Yellow light bloomed brilliantly behind him. A dark shape, the ruptured canister, tumbled at the front of what quickly became a rolling wave of flame.
And you are found wanting!
At last, some presentiment of the wrath to come made Bowstitch turn. He dropped his rifle and threw up his arms in a futile attempt to shield his flesh from the tsunami. It wasn't the water, but the fire this time. Anya dragged Levi over the cliff with her. Not really wanting to watch, Anya turned her gaze up as her feet reached the water. To her horror, she saw that a glowing cascade of flame rolled right out over the cliff into the air. It was falling right on top of them. The water swallowed them. Somehow, she still held on to Levi's hand as they went down through the cold liquid. Her feet hit silty bottom. Her right ankle panged. Her left leg flexed and absorbed the last of her momentum. She shut her eyes when they hit. She opened them again. She clearly saw Levi next to her, looking astonished. The rounded mud bottom of the pool, the water weeds growing from it, the tail flick of a startled fish fleeing the commotion. All lit by a weird yellow glow knifing through the murky water. She looked up. A ceiling of fire hung a few feet above their heads. It was literally that, napalm burning on the surface of the pool. And they were beginning to bob right back up into the floating inferno. Getting a fresh death grip on Levi's hand, Anya went horizontal and swam for all she was worth. She gestured for Levi to swim with her, or she hoped she did, and hoped he could see her signal at all. His goggles and glasses were gone. For a moment, he fought her, wide-eyed, bubbles streaming out his nose and open mouth. She squeezed his hand hard. Cognizance came into his eyes. He nodded. She let go to free their arms. Side by side, they swam beneath the lethal glow. The need for fresh air tore at Anya's lungs. She willed herself to keep going until they were out from under that hideous glare. They came up against the accidental rock dam that formed the pond. Anya braked with a hand and shot to the surface. She broke through. The air was hot and stank of petroleum fractions. The fire had already started to die off into little patches of yellow flame, rocking on the water and giving off greasy black smoke. Levi thrashed his arms and shook his head wildly.
I can't swim!
I'm glad you didn't remember that when you were doing it a moment ago. Just put your feet down. Forth. You'll touch bottom.
Oh.
He calmed down, and the two, leaning together for mutual support, hobbled up the west bank of the pond, with the little waterfall outflow burbling right beside them. They found themselves face to face with a line of bearded men with long coats, stalking toward them through the scrub beyond the stream bed. Their shadows were grim, decisive lines before them. They were 50 yards off. Evidently, they withdrew a healthy distance when the napalm fall spilled over the cliff. Now they were back with weapons at their hips. Catching sight of the sodden pair, Kalashnikovs came up. The men in front of Anya started coming apart in quick sprays of red. It was as if they were strange puppets stuffed with firecrackers, not real, living, breathing men. They weren't being cut down. They exploded. A slim shape swept low overhead from right to left, passing above the smoking remnants of the men it destroyed. If there were any survivors, they had the sense to go down fast and try to become one with the planet. Anya whipped her head counterclockwise to see a fighter aircraft its delta wings and a slim, tubular fuselage orange in the light of the setting sun, pull up from its strafing run. She could see the single yellow flame of its exhaust. Anya and Levi ducked. Clouds of dirt and smoke flew everywhere. Things flew through the air. Rocks, shattered weapons, tubular objects shoddily wrapped in flapping cloth. Those last bits didn't bear too much thinking about, especially when a detached arm bounced not 15 feet away from Anya and rolled to a stop. Anya saw a pair of shapes like gigantic mutant dragonflies hovering 100 feet in the air, turning and dipping this way and that. They were behind all the racket. Machine cannons mounted beneath their domed, bulging snouts and rocket pods beneath their stub wings ripped holy hell out of the Peshmerga.
Oh my God, they're hands!
She glanced at Levi. He was staring slack-jawed up at the flying monsters. She wasn't sure how much he could see without his glasses, but whatever it was he saw, he wasn't making any sense at all out of it.
Russian helicopters, like from Soviet times.
Anya realized she was babbling. She also realized he almost certainly couldn't hear her. Still, she felt relief. She was pretty sure. She didn't actually understand what was going on any better than Levi seemed to. But the horrible deadly aircraft weren't shooting at them. In fact, they were shooting at the guys who were going to shoot at them.
That has to be good, right?
What was going on around them didn't seem to be a battle as much as it was a massacre. A sudden blast of wind beat down upon them. Anya looked up, almost overbalancing and toppling back into the pond, as she saw another huge shape dropping toward them below a flashing circle of rotor. It settled down to land on retractable wheels not 30 yards from them. Anya and Levi just stood and gaped, despite the bits of dirt and dried vegetable stuff getting blown in their faces. It wasn't as if they were going to run from a helicopter, even if they had all their legs in working order. This was a different model chopper, looking even bigger than the huge, grotesque gunships, more resembling a pregnant guppy than an armed dragonfly. A hatch opened in the side closest to them. Out spilled a bunch of guys in salwar kameez and chitrali caps, serious beard shadows and angry mustaches, all of them carrying Kalashnikov rifles and one or two light machine guns with drum magazines. As the helicopter's twin turbine engines throttled down in a whine, the Afghan-looking men fanned out to set up a defensive perimeter, in case anybody still cared. Down from the chopper stepped a tall, pale-skinned man, incongruously natty in a fedora and a tan London fog coat.
Miss Creed, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Are we rescued or being taken prisoner?
Yes.
All right. This is officially too much.
Anya passed out from exhaustion. Anya opened her eyes. A nurse adjusted some equipment next to her bed by a cheery yellow light. Or Anya thought she was a nurse from her crisp white and green uniform and the little white old-timey cap perched atop her head. Apparently sensing the patient had awakened, she turned to smile at Anya. She was a young woman, pretty, dark, with raven black hair bobbed short beneath her paper cap. The nurse left the room without saying anything. A spray of cheerful yellow flowers stuck up out of a pearlescent ceramic vase on a table beside Anya's bed. Beyond the flowers stood another bed. In it, Rabbi Levi Leibowitz, dressed in white pajamas with gray pinstripes, lay propped up against a pile of pillows. He had a bandage plastered right across the bridge of his nose. He blinked at her through what she dimly understood must be new glasses perched on the bandage, and smiled shyly.
Levi, you made it.
Hi, Anya. You too. I guess our gods won out after all.
What's with the bandage?
I did a face plant on the mountain, remember? They fixed it. Cosmetic surgery. They seem pretty good at it.
Who?
The doctors here.
Where is here?
Welcome to Yerevan.
Anya had only heard that dry tone and clipped intonation once before. Even so, she knew there was no way she would ever forget it.
Who are you?
She turned to look at the man who sat in a wooden chair beside the window. The bright morning sun rushing in obscured him in its glare.
So, the United States is currently friends with Armenia?
Armenia is friendly to us, and that's what really matters, isn't it?
I suppose. Yeah. I'm not sure I want to know what's going on. It's never a good thing when government agents show up out of nowhere, even if they did save our lives.
Anya had the sinking feeling there might be people out there who knew more about her than she wanted them to. The man crossed his long, slim legs and leaned forward slightly to clasp his knee with pale, spidery hands.
I have to thank you both for the show you put on. It made for highly entertaining viewing.
What are you talking about?
You didn't have a satellite tasked to watch us.
Oh, no. You did, however, occupy the undivided attention of your own personal Global Hawk remotely piloted aircraft.
Feeling suddenly weary, Anya shook her head.
We never had a clue.
That's kind of the point of a spy drone, isn't it?
So, what about those aircraft that... rescued us, I guess?
Rescued you, indeed.
The Hinz and the fighter plane, whatever it was.
Sukhoi Su-17, fitter C, ground attack plane, actually. Rather elderly, but gets the job done. We can all aspire to that, can't we?
Were they Armenian?
Oh, yes.
But we were in Turkey.
She sensed as much as she saw his thin smile.
Hot pursuit of Muslim terrorists covers a multitude of sins in these years of the long war.
I see. And those dudes with you in the helicopter?
Mercenaries. Don't waste your breath asking.
Of course not.
He leaned back and draped an arm over the back of his wooden chair.
I'd like to offer you both, on what we might call an official, unofficial basis, the profound thanks of the United States of America.
What for?
You've helped tie up a number of ends which, if left loose, posed major threats to national security.
Like what?
Leif Baron, for one. He'd become a loose cannon. He spent so much time working among and with Islamic crazies that some people were starting to say he'd forgotten which side he was really on.
Anya frowned. She couldn't quite buy that. Baron was a psychopath and a fanatic, but treason would violate his self-image. And he was unlikely to join Muslims waging war against Christianity.
Or am I wrong about that? It wasn't as if I actually knew him well. Maybe Baron the religious zealot found not a new faith, but rather alliance with spirits far more akin to his than those of the West's decadent materialists bent on abandoning all religion.
Anya had read right-wing American fundamentalist tracts in praise of Islamic fervor. She said nothing. Arguing with government mystery men was not a fruitful pastime. But Levi didn't know that yet.
That doesn't make any sense. I can't believe the government would carry out such a convoluted scheme just on, what, the off chance of eliminating a single suspected rogue? It's just too Rube Goldberg. There's gotta be more to it.
Of course there is. And we'll never find out what that is. Our expedition might have served to cover any number of different ends or operations.
Thank you, Miss Creed.
Say, what about the Assyrian tablet? It was in the pocket of my pants. What happened to it? It must be extremely valuable.
I'm sorry, Rabbi Leibowitz. Anything other than personal effects you might have brought down the mountain have been confiscated in the interest of national security. For reasons that should be obvious, they cannot be returned.
But it's a priceless artifact. Its historical significance is beyond question.
What its significance is moot. Please understand, Rabbi, Miss Creed certainly does. What you think you recall happening up on Ararat never really happened.
Levi sent Anya a pleading look. She shook her head sadly.
What really happened, as will shortly be made public, is that your expedition proved the Ararat anomaly was simply a basalt formation. It's geological, not any kind of human artifact.
What? I saw it. It was definitely human-built. It was...
She stopped, frowning. Not a ship, she realized with sudden shock. That quickly turned to chagrin at not seeing it earlier.
It's a temple, Anya. Constructed partially out of wood, hauled painstakingly up that terrible peak for obscure but obviously powerful religious reasons. I suppose it's not any weirder than Stonehenge or the Terracotta Army, is it really? And don't feel bad that we didn't figure it out earlier. We were sort of busy.
The government agent smiled.
The anomaly is just a rock. Sadly, unexpectedly savage weather caused an avalanche that tragically wiped out the rest of your expedition. The world is very fortunate that Miss Creed and Rabbi Leibowitz survived to tell the truth about the fate of the expedition and what they found. You're both heroes.
Anya did not miss the fact that he emphasized the word truth.
And that truth is what you are scheduled to tell the eager global media in a press conference tomorrow. Should anyone suggest otherwise, that will constitute an extreme breach of national security. There will be no trial. The matter will be settled covertly.
Levi shook his head in disbelief.
So the ancient Assyrian relic we brought back, excuse me, didn't bring back, goes where? To that warehouse where they put the Ark of the Covenant in the first Indiana Jones movie?
The government agent swung his cocked leg back and forth.
You have a highly active imagination, Rabbi.
But what interest could the U.S. government possibly have in keeping something like this secret? The Ark, Noah's Ark, hasn't got anything to do with national security.
It does when the country's run by born-agains.
Should that circumstance ever have pertained, Rabbi Leibowitz, it no longer does, I can assure you. The inmates proved inadequate to the task of running the asylum. As to how such arcana impact the nation's security, Miss Creed, you might be surprised. Be aware that above all, the U.S. government, in common with the other governments of the Earth, has a vested interest in maintaining order. That includes the accepted order of things, including the public understanding of the world and how it works. That in turn encompasses large areas of scientific and, we might even say, esoteric knowledge.
What? You mean flying saucers? Cold fusion? Anti-gravity? This is ridiculous! You can't be serious!
I'll leave you now. You need to rest up for your big press conference tomorrow. In a couple of hours, some of our media specialists will meet with you to help you prepare.
The agent left the room quietly. When the door shut behind him, Levi turned to Anya.
What are we gonna say?
Whatever they want us to say.
Why won't you resist them? I thought you were a fighter.
I am when there's something worth fighting for.
But the truth! We can get the truth out! If not at the press conference, then over the internet!
No, Levi. Believe me. We can't.
Levi sank back in his bed.
You know what you're talking about, don't you? You've done this sort of thing before.
Yes, unfortunately, I have.
Tears welled up in his eyes and rolled down cheeks peeling with sun and windburn into a beard neatly trimmed by Armenian nurses.
So it was all in vain. Those poor, deluded young men. Mr. Atabek. Even the Kurds, who died for something they thought was worthwhile. All the pain. All the blood.
No, Levi. It wasn't in vain.
But we failed.
No.
Blinking away tears, Levi looked at her, confused.
We went up the mountain to find something, remember?
The truth about the anomaly.
He spoke as if he suspected some kind of verbal trap.
Yes, and that's what we did, isn't it? We learned the truth, you and I. We found it, and we brought it back alive. And if we can never share it with the rest of the world, we know they can never take that away from us, can they?
He looked at her for a long moment, then slowly, he smiled.
No. No. I guess they can't.
He seemed exhausted. He probably was, given what he'd been through. For that matter, so was she. Even though she felt only a little residual pain in her right hip and ankle, suggesting those injuries had been minor, it would take time to get her strength back. She'd been right up to the edge, and as far beyond it as she ever had been before.
Anya?
Yes, Levi?
If this is what victory feels like, may the Lord preserve me from ever knowing defeat.
Amen.
Rogue Angel Paradox is a Graphic Audio production.